ideas and practices, and we'll do some meditation on those. So, begin by sitting in a way that is comfortable, but at the same time conducive for meditation. So, if you're sitting on the floor, have your legs crossed in whatever way is most comfortable, you know, least painful, so that you can sit still without having to move too much during this meditation session. And if you're sitting on a chair, have your 2 feet flat on the floor. And try to keep your back straight. That helps the mind to be more awake, alert, and clear and focused. But don't let your shoulders be tight. Let them relax, be loose. And you can have your hands arranged in whatever way you're used to, but in our tradition we place our hands in our lap with the right on top, the left below, palms facing upwards, and the 2 thumbs touching. So if you're comfortable with that hand position, you can put your hands in that way. Don't press your arms against your sides, but leave some space for the air to circulate. Have your head and chin tilted downwards just a little bit so your head isn't too high nor too low. Have your mouth and jaw relaxed. And it's good to put the tip of your tongue on the roof of your mouth behind the upper teeth. That reduces the need to swallow. Swallowing can become disturbing or distracting if you get into a concentrated state of mind. And it's good when we meditate to try to breathe in and out through our nose rather than our mouth, unless your nose is blocked and you can't breathe through your nose, and of course you need to use your mouth. So try to breathe in and out through your nose, and that means your mouth is closed, but not, again, not having your teeth clenched. Let your jaw be relaxed. And then with the eyes, it's recommended to keep them open a little bit so there's some light coming in that can help us stay awake and alert. And if you have your eyes looking down, then there's not so many things you would see that would distract your attention. So before we begin the meditation, let's think about why we're doing it. Why am I sitting here doing meditation? Some of you may already have a good motivation. Some of you may not know why you're here. So if you don't have a clear idea of why you're doing meditation, you might try to generate an altruistic intention, meaning that you're doing it not just for yourself, but also for others. I mean, I'm sure we all do want happiness for ourselves. That's why we're here. We want to have more happiness and peace and less unhappiness and suffering. And we're hoping the practice of meditation will help us to do that. But it's good if we can open up our mind, our heart to others understand that they want happiness too. Everybody, all the human beings in the world, and all the other kinds of beings too, like animals, birds, and so on. Every being that has a mind has within their mind the wish to be happy, to have their needs fulfilled, like food and water and safety. And nobody wants to die, nobody wants to suffer, to be hurt. So one way to generate an altruistic intention is to have the thought, may this meditation that we're doing be helpful to as many people and beings as possible. May it help increase peace and well-being and happiness and all the good qualities, good experiences for not only me but as many other people and beings as possible. And then let's do a short body scan to relax our body as much as possible. First, feel the top of your head. Relax the top of your head. Then feel your forehead. And let that relax. Relax your eyes. Then the rest of your face, all the facial muscles, jaw. But you might want to continue smiling a little bit. Then relax the right side of your head. Then the back of your head. Then the left side of your head. Then the inside of your head. All the brain cells, nerve cells, skull, the whole of the inside of your head, let it be light, clear, relaxed. So the whole of your head, outside and inside, let it be as relaxed and free of tension as possible. And then you relax your neck and throat. And then your shoulders and the upper part of your back. And then let your awareness move down through the back. Relax the middle part of your back, the lower part of your back. All the way down to your seat. Let the whole of your back be as relaxed and free of tension as possible. Then shift your awareness to the front part of your body, starting with your chest, including the inside of your chest, your lungs, your heart. Let go of any tension in that area. And then let your awareness continue moving down through the middle part of your body, your torso, relaxing the muscles, the organs, the abdominal area, the pelvic area. So let the whole of your torso, front, back, inside, outside, be as relaxed and free of tension as possible. But if you're not able to let go of all tension, if there's some places of tension here and there, try not to worry about that. Just let them be and just feel that you are doing the best you can to let go of tension. And then do your right leg. First feel the upper part of your right leg. Relax that area. And the lower part of the right leg. And then your right foot and toes. And then shift your awareness to your left leg, starting with the upper part. Relax that area. And the lower part of the left leg. Then the left foot and toes. Then relax your right arm, starting with the top upper part of the arm, going all the way down, hand and fingers. And do the same with the left arm. First relax the upper part, lower part, hand and fingers. So try to keep your body as relaxed as possible for the rest of the time that we're meditating. So we're going to be focusing on the breath, the breathing, and try to just let the breath be natural, not controlled in any way. Just let your body breathe as it normally does. Attention to your breath in whatever place or whatever way is most easy for you. The important thing is to try to stay with the full inhalation and the full exhalation of each breath, one after the next. Notice if and when your mind wanders away from the breath to something else, and gently bring it back, let go of the other thought or memory or whatever distraction it is, Let it go, put it aside, come back to the breath. You can make mental notes about what kind of distractions you notice, thought, memory, sound. You just make a note of it, let it go, put it aside, come back to the breath. Try to be without expectations, such as wanting to have nice experiences, not wanting to have bad experiences. Instead, just be open to and accepting of whatever experiences occur. Try to avoid judging any of your experiences as good or bad. I like this, I don't like that. But if that happens, notice that, be aware of that. Notice that your mind is judging, reacting, liking, disliking. Just notice that, make a note of it, and let it go, and come back to the breath. So try to be in a state of mind of equanimity, meaning non-judgmental, not attached to certain experiences, nor averse to other experiences. Instead, just accepting whatever experiences arise, remembering they are impermanent, transitory, like clouds in the sky. So let them come, notice them, let them go. And keep coming back to the breath. it's always okay to come back to the breath whenever the mind wanders away. The breath is always there, like a faithful friend. It doesn't go away from us. And if our mind goes away from the breath, we can come back to the breath and it will still be there. Calm, steady, ever present. So don't worry or feel bad if your mind keeps wandering away. It's completely okay to keep coming back to the breath again and again. So one thing that can happen sometimes when doing this kind of meditation is feeling bored. Bored with the breath. Did you ever feel that way? When you think about our normal lifestyle, you know, we're so busy all the time, looking at different things on our phone, on our devices, people, shopping centers, TV, internet. So our mind is used to going from one thing to another very quickly. Interesting, exciting, stimulating things. So then when it comes to sitting and meditating on the breath, watching the breath coming in and going out, our mind can quickly get bored. You know, nothing very exciting about the breath. So when, if that ever happens to you, it may not happen so much in a situation like this where we're meditating just for a short time, but if you go to a retreat, you might be meditating 8 hours a day and you can't use your phone, you can't even talk to people, so then it's easy for the feeling of boredom to happen. So one thing you can do to deal with boredom, especially like with the breath, if you're meditating on the breath, is to try to see that actually the breath is something really wonderful, really precious. Because breath is life, right? If we stop breathing, we're dead. No more life. So being able to breathe in and out, one breath after another, is pretty precious. If you were trapped in an elevator for a couple of hours and the air started running out, then your breath would be pretty interesting. I don't think you would be bored. You know, just being able to continue breathing, wow, that's really wonderful, that's really precious. So I heard Achin Brahm, you may have heard of him, he's a well-known English, he's actually originally from England, but he's been living in Australia a long time, and he teaches a lot of meditation. And he spoke about when he was in Thailand, he was in the monastery of Achan Cha for many years. I think there are quite a few other Western monks there as well. And he said there was one monk from France, I think, who hated the breath. I mean, they were all taught to meditate on the breath. And this one monk just didn't like the breath. So he felt kind of annoyance and irritation about having to focus on the breath. And he didn't deal with his irritation. So it sounds like it just got worse and worse. And eventually he just didn't want to meditate anymore. He hated meditation and he left, and who knows what happened to him. But anyway, that's sad, you know, that he had this aversion for his breath, and he didn't find a way of changing that, and so it just built up more and more and more, and then he eventually just didn't want to meditate anymore. So I think that's rather sad, and I think it's good to try to overcome such an aversion. Although, you know, there are other kinds of meditation. So it isn't that the breath is the only object for meditation. So if you really don't like it or it doesn't work for you, you can find some other object. I met some guy in Australia who'd been trying to meditate on the breath for years and years, and he had so much trouble. And then finally he heard about another kind of object that could be used. Kasinas, they use these in the Theravada tradition. They're discs, colored discs. It's another practice taught by the Buddha. So he started doing that kind of practice, and he found that worked much better. So don't feel that, you know, if you can't do this kind of practice, if this doesn't work for you, then you have to give up meditation altogether. You can try other objects. But on the other hand, it could be just a question of changing your attitude about the breath. So that's why I'm suggesting, you know, that you come to see the breath as something really precious and wonderful rather than boring. And also, I think my experience with boredom is it happens when you're not really paying attention. If you really, really pay attention to what's happening moment by moment by moment, you'll actually notice that there's a lot going on in every moment. It may not be as exciting as some action-packed kung fu movie, but, you know, like there are changes happening every moment. One breath is different from the next one. So each breath is different, each breath is unique. In each moment, there's different things happening in our body, different things happening in our mind, different things happening in our environment. So if you really pay attention very, very carefully to what's going on moment by moment, then your boredom will go away because you realize there's actually a lot going on. So I think boredom happens because we're not really paying attention, not really being mindful, not really staying in the present. with what's happening moment by moment by moment. So that's another thing that can help to deal with boredom. Really paying attention. And then, yeah, if you feel bored with the breath, try to make it, you know, change your mind and realize that, you know, it is something beautiful and wonderful and precious. Also, meditating on the breath can be seen as a kind of anchor for our mind, for our experience. Just as, let's say you have a really nice boat, beautiful, expensive sailboat. You don't want to lose it, right? You don't want it to float away and get lost at sea. You want to keep it somewhere. So you use an anchor to keep your boat in one place where you want it to be. And paying attention to the breath is like an anchor for our mind to be in the present, to be here and now. Because, you know, so much of the time our mind is not in the present. It's all over the place. It's in the future, in the past, other places. And also a lot of the thoughts that come up are not very relaxing or pleasant. You know, we tend to worry a lot. What if this happens? What if that happens? Does this person like me? Does that person hate me? You know, a lot of the... They're not thoughts that make us feel calm and peaceful and relaxed. They're thoughts that, you know, cause us to be anxious and tense. And so this is what happens if we just let our mind go. The places where it goes to are not necessarily nice, peaceful, calm places, but places that are unpleasant and disturbing. So it's nice to have an anchor, yeah, to come back to the present, back to the here and now. Also, one of Thich Nhat Hanh's books that I read, he may have said this in other books as well, but he talked about coming home. Coming back to the breath is like coming home. Usually people like to come home. If you have a nice home where you feel comfortable and relaxed and it's your place and you're familiar with it. So after you've been traveling or you've been at work and it's kind of stressful and busy or tired, it's nice to come home and just relax, sit down and relax. So he said, you know, coming back to the breath is coming back to the body. It's coming back to ourselves, coming back home. So that's another analogy, another way of thinking about the breath that you might find helpful. So these are just some ideas that could help you to feel more of a sense of pleasure and enjoyment about doing meditation rather than finding it boring, annoying, irritating. Because ideally we should be happy when we meditate. Yeah, I mean, that's the best thing, to enjoy it, to find meditation enjoyable. And if you're not finding it enjoyable, then it's good to look at why. Why am I not enjoying it? And is there something you can do to make it more enjoyable? Because the thing is, if you don't enjoy it, if it's boring, annoying, irritating, or you have certain expectations about how it should be or what you want to happen and that's not happening. So then if that kind of experience keeps happening and you don't deal with it, then eventually you may just feel aversion to meditation and not want to do it anymore. So it's good to try to find a way to stop your mind being unhappy or bored with meditation and instead find ways of making your mind happy about it. Does that make sense? I've been talking most of the time in the previous sessions. I haven't given you that much chance to ask questions. So does anyone have any burning questions you've been wanting to ask but didn't have a chance? I mean, I could keep talking, but I just want to give you a chance. No? Well, I don't see any hands coming up.
Testing. Rumba, just wondering, you know, the meditation on loving kindness or compassion, usually you meditate with a person in mind, right? Yeah. I have to do it this way so that maybe no feedback. Like, for example, you know, you call...
You meditate with a...
Let's say, you know, on meditation on loving kindness,
yeah,
or compassion, you know, you call to mind a person and you, you know, you reanalyze why we should generate loving kindness and all that to that person, then we extend to other people. So will it, when one proceed with the meditation, will it come a time whereby there is nobody, I mean, as in like, the meditation is just on that compassion itself, with no anybody appearing. You know what I mean? Because the thing is like, what is exactly the object of meditation per se?
Yeah.
Because usually, yeah, when you meditate on compassion, you have somebody in mind.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I mean, my understanding is, they do talk about, like in the Lamrim Chenmo, Lama Tsongkhapa says, you know, first think of people you already like, you know, easy objects, so meditate on loving kindness for them, and then move on to people who are a little more distant from you, a little more difficult to love, but work on loving kindness for them. And then, you know, most difficult ones. You sort of go from the easier to the more difficult ones. So I don't recall hearing that you ever get to the point where you don't have any people or living beings in mind that you're generating loving kindness for. But when you mention that, I mean, they do say that loving kindness, that state of mind, metta, can be used as an object for cultivating concentration, like shamatha. If you want to do shamatha practice, there's different objects that can use. One of them is loving kindness, and I think what I've heard or read, if I remember correctly, that you generate that feeling of loving kindness, and then you just focus on that, concentrate on that, and bring your mind back to that whenever it wanders away. So maybe, I'm not sure, but maybe that you would just focus on that state of mind without necessarily thinking of the individuals. I mean, I think in Lamrim Chenmo, he does say it should be loving kindness for all sentient beings as your object, yeah. So you feel this loving kindness for all sentient beings, and then you focus on that. But recently I was reading another book, and it said, another source says, it doesn't have to be all sentient beings, even just one sentient being, you know, just generating that feeling of loving kindness for one sentient being or one person, and then focusing on that. So my guess is, yeah, maybe in that situation, you're not so much thinking of the person, the object of your loving kindness, but just that mind itself. So is that what you're asking? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm a bit embarrassed, but I'm wondering if I could share something about this. I used to go for teachings by His Holiness in March to Delhi. And one time for 4 days, he was talking basically about Kamala Sheela's book on meditation. And this particular thing came up. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, it's usually easier to start with an object in mind, with a person in mind, and so you go through that. But he did say you can alternate the two different kinds of meditation. So if you're able to just, at some point, you get deep into the meditation, like she's saying, on that state of mind itself, he said that that's also very good. that part is single-pointed. Mm-hmm. Stay in it as long as you can, but if your mind's getting distracted, then maybe you can switch to the other kind.
Yeah, then you need to go back to generating that feeling. Or if it fades, maybe you have a strong feeling of love, but after a while, it goes away.
Yeah.
So then you may need to regenerate that feeling by thinking of objects, thinking of people or sentient beings. Yeah. Thank you. Well, if any questions come up later, you can ask. I just wanted to give you a chance now. And then last week, I think, somebody asked a question about sadness. If you're doing meditation and a feeling of sadness comes up, what to do? So I wanted to share some things from a book that I like very much. And it's by Pema Chodron, who's quite a well-known teacher and writer, one of the earliest American women to become a nun and a teacher in Buddhism. And she's written quite a few books. And one of her books, a recent one, is also called How to Meditate, like mine. But it has the subtitle, A Practical Guide to Making Friends with Your Mind, which I like very much. Yeah, because sometimes we're not friends with our mind. Sometimes we're fighting with our mind, fighting with ourselves, and that's not so good. You know, it's not good to fight with anybody, including yourself, your mind. And I really like this book. It's very nice. She has a lot of very good things to say. And right at the beginning, the first part of the book, she talks a bit about suffering, how in Buddhism we talk about suffering or dukkha. It's the first thing Buddha talked about when he started teaching, the truth of suffering, unsatisfactoriness, and how this is just a natural part of our life, but also how the root of suffering, the cause of suffering, is in ourselves, in our mind. And so the way to become free of suffering is to work on our mind, not to try to change everybody else in the world, get rid of all the annoying and irritating things out there. Of course, we can try to change the world, but you know, there's only so much we can do and a lot we can't do in terms of changing the world. But if we can change our own mind, then we'll be able to deal with the world better. And actually, there's this wonderful quotation in the text by Shantideva, The Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. He's actually talking about patience. And he says, you know, it would be impossible to find enough leather to cover the whole surface of the world so that you can walk around and never step on any thorns or rocks or, you know, broken glass and so on. So, like, in other words, trying to protect your feet from the world by covering the world with leather, that would be impossible. But if you put leather on your own feet, which is what we do, we put on a pair of shoes, and then wherever we go, wherever we walk, our feet will not be hurt by thorns and rocks and so forth. So in a similar way, if we think that we can get rid of all the difficult people and difficult conditions in the world, get all of them out of the way, that's not very realistic. It's not possible. On the other hand, if we can protect our own mind from being hurt by people and things in the world, that's much more realistic, much more practical. And that's what patience is all about, learning patience. And then he goes on to explain that. But anyway, it's a beautiful idea, you know, the whole idea of working, instead of trying to change the world and, you know, everybody else, we can work on our own mind and change that, then wherever we go, whoever we meet, whatever happens, we'll know how to manage, we'll know how to handle it. Yeah, so she actually talked about that verse, that analogy, and she said, you know, if we feel irritated by somebody, we can work with our mind. So trying to get rid of that person or change that person. And she says, this is the only way to really be happy and contented with the world we live in. Then she goes on to talk about the purpose of meditation. She says, we do not meditate in order to be comfortable. In other words, we don't meditate in order to always, all the time, feel good. She says that's probably really shocking to a lot of people because that's what a lot of people want. They want to feel good all the time, and they're hoping that by practicing meditation they'll be able to feel good all the time. So she says that's not the purpose of meditation. However, the purpose of meditation is not to feel bad. You'll be glad to know. Rather, meditation gives us the opportunity to have an open, compassionate attentiveness to whatever is going on. The meditative space is like the big sky, spacious, vast enough to accommodate anything that arises. It reminds me of something in one of the texts I studied before, you know, that the sky doesn't have prejudice about who goes through it or what goes through it. Anything can go through the sky. Airplanes, birds, clouds, pollution, you know. Like she says here, the sky is huge and vast and it accepts everything, anything and everything. Because everything just passes through. Nothing is permanent, nothing stays, things pass through. So that's a nice analogy for the meditative state of mind, just allowing everything to come and go, everything to pass through, instead of putting up some kind of fence and saying, okay, you can come through, but not you. You can come into my mind, but not you. Get out of here. Go away. Which is what we often do, isn't it? Sometimes we have a reaction of dislike and aversion and, ew, I don't like that in my mind. Go away. Well, that's not very helpful. In meditation, our thoughts and emotions can become like clouds that dwell and pass away. Good and comfortable, pleasing and difficult and painful, all of this comes and goes. So the essence of meditation is training in something that is quite radical and definitely not the habitual pattern of the species. And that is to stay with ourselves no matter what is happening, without putting labels of good and bad, right and wrong, pure and impure, on top of our experience. So, not easy to do, but I think all meditation teachers advise this, that, you know, we try to allow whatever is coming into our mind, allow it to come, but not clinging to it, nor pushing anything away, just letting things come and go. And in this way, we get to know ourselves, get to know our mind, and we learn how to, like she says, become friends with our mind instead of battling, fighting, and being critical and judgmental. I like this, and I don't like that. I want this, and I don't want that. So if we're constantly doing that, then our mind can be like a battleground, which isn't very peaceful. If meditation was just about feeling good, and I think all of us secretly hope that is what it's about, we would often feel like we must be doing it wrong. Because at times, meditation can be such a difficult experience. A very common experience of the meditator in a typical day or on a typical retreat is the experience of boredom, restlessness, a hurting back, pain in the knees. Even the mind might be hurting. So many not feeling good experiences. Instead, meditation is about a compassionate openness and the ability to be with oneself and one's situation, through all kinds of experiences. In meditation, you're open to whatever life presents you with. And then in her book, she has a whole section on emotions, how to deal with emotions. And I also, in my book, have a section on, I think it's called negative states of mind, how to deal with dealing with negative energy. Yeah, so if we do find disturbing or destructive thoughts or emotions coming up, like anger or strong attachment, greed, jealousy, and so forth, fear, anxiety. So what do we do with those? How do we deal with those? I mean, a lot of the things that come in our mind in meditation are just like random thoughts, you know, like, what am I going to cook for dinner? You know, what time should I get up tomorrow morning? What should I have for breakfast? And, you know, not extremely important things. Last night's movie. Yeah, so kind of reliving past experiences or planning future experiences. It's not very crucial or important. But sometimes during meditation, things can come up which are more important. You know, for example, hurt feelings from the past or angry feelings about something that happened, you know. And it's not good to just try to brush those away, because it might be important to look at them and learn from them and resolve them. Yeah, if we just try to brush them away, then it might be a bit like burying them. You know, with this expression, sweeping under the carpet or putting things in the closet. It's a kind of like suppression or denial or avoidance. And that problem doesn't really get solved by just avoiding it. So it can be good to allow it to be there and look at it and learn from it. Bring in as much wisdom, compassion, skillfulness as you can to see, okay, what can I do with this? How can I learn from it? How can I make this into something positive? So that's a huge topic, how to do that. But she has a little meditation in here on dealing with a painful memory, like if there's some kind of unpleasant or painful memory that comes up that in our meditation, how we can deal with that. So I thought we could just try this out together in the meditation, and see if there's any questions afterwards. So basically, instead of trying to push it away or try to run away from it, we just let it be there and just look at it, try to understand it better in a light way, not in an intense way, or I really want to get to the bottom of this and figure this one out. Not like that, but just, oh, like getting to know this feeling a little bit better and have an attitude of friendliness towards it rather than aversion or fear. So let's try this. So make yourselves comfortable, again, in a good position for meditation. So the first few minutes we'll do the meditation on the breath, just to settle down the mind. And if you're feeling sleepy, tired, which is quite possible if you've been busy all day, then it can be good to keep the eyes open a little bit. Closing the eyes, you might start nodding off, falling asleep. So we do want to try to stay awake and alert in meditation. So keeping your eyes open a little, looking downwards, can help you to stay awake. So bring your mind home to your breathing, to your body, to right here, right now. And remember this image or analogy of the mind being like space, vast, clear, open space that allows anything to pass through it, to come and go. Then allow to come into this space of your mind some unpleasant or painful memory. Maybe better not to think of the worst thing that ever happened to you, but something relatively small, for example, today or yesterday. Maybe somebody said something that was a little hurtful or inconsiderate, or there was some awkward moment where you felt not sure if you did the right thing or said the right thing, how people would react to you. Or it's just some look that a person had that made you wonder if you did something wrong. So something relatively small or minor like that. Allow that memory to come into your mind. And when you have thought of this experience, try to focus on the emotion that you felt. Don't focus so much on what happened, who said what, who did what, what's the story all about, but instead focus on how you felt. What was your feeling at that moment? And when you focus on this feeling, do it with an attitude of kindness and compassion, the same way you would with, say, a little child who looks upset or hurt or crying. So bring kindness, gentleness to this exploration of your emotion. But also try not to get caught up in the emotion and then drowned in the emotion. Instead, try to just observe it in an objective way. And try to explore it, get to know it a bit better. For example, if somebody asked you to describe this feeling, what would you say? How does it feel? Is it hot or cold, sharp, hard or soft? What kind of texture does it have? Is it in a particular place in your body, a location? Does it move or is it stable? Does it change or does it stay exactly the same? So the point is just try to stay with it rather than run away from it. And try to get to know it, try to understand it better. After staying with the emotion for a little while and exploring it, trying to understand it better, then bring your awareness back to your breathing, back to the in and out movement of the breath. Just be with that for a few minutes. So this is just like one step towards working with emotions, and there's more, of course, especially if it's a very complex emotion or if it's very long term, if it's something that's been in our life for ages, years and years and years. But at least it gives us something we can do instead of just feeling uncomfortable with emotions or feeling frightened of them or feeling aversion, dislike. That's what we often do. We often feel, oh, I don't like this. This doesn't feel good and we want it to go away. But that doesn't help. You know, this is expression. What you resist will persist. You know that one? I think it's true. You know, when you have resistance, when you feel, I don't like this, I don't want this, go away, please leave me alone. Well, it'll probably just still be there and continue bothering you. But if you change that attitude and instead accept, have an attitude of acceptance, okay, that feeling is there. Yeah, it's a little unpleasant, a little uncomfortable, but it's okay, I can live with it. Starting to move towards acceptance. You might find, I mean, what I find myself is, you know, if I, it doesn't always work, but sometimes just accepting and acknowledging some kind of unpleasant feeling or emotion, it just goes away by itself. It's almost like that's all it needed. It just needed to be acknowledged and then it went. Sometimes it's almost like magic. Any questions or comments? Do you think this could be something helpful?
Sometimes Hello. There are times when we use meditation to look at like negative emotions. And what do we do when you get overpowered? It's like the more you look at it, it gets too intense. It actually overpowers you.
Yeah, it's good to try to avoid being overpowered or overwhelmed by them, because then you can sort of lose your neutrality, your balanced state of mind. So it's good to try to be in a state of mind where you can look at the emotion, learn about it, work with it, but not be overwhelmed by it. So I think if you do find yourself feeling overwhelmed, it can be helpful to go back to the breath, go back to your body. Because the body, you know, the breath and the body are sort of very stable and solid. So go back to that. And also, you know, the Buddhist methods for working with emotions are methods that we do by ourselves. You know, you're just sitting there all by yourself trying to deal with these emotions. And sometimes we're able to do that, or some people are able to do that. But sometimes the emotions can be too big and difficult, and, you know, we're not able to do it on our own. So then it could be helpful to find somebody to talk to, like a therapist, counselor, spiritual teacher, or even a good friend. Sometimes just talking to another person about some difficulty that you're having, that can be very helpful. Sometimes talking about it, you suddenly get, oh, now I understand what I need to do, or something like that. Or the other person might give you some ideas. So don't feel that you always have to be all by yourself working with your mind and your emotions. It's good to share with others and get help from others. So one of the things, and she mentions this in the book, and I also find it too, that this, you know, learning to be more accepting and acknowledging of painful emotions in yourself is a doorway to compassion, greater compassion. Because, you know, we all share this, well, maybe not everybody, you know, but many people have the same emotions that we do. Like, let's say sadness, okay, a feeling of sadness. You know, that's something everybody feels, at least sometimes. However, you know, people are often kind of afraid to show that they have sadness. So often people will force themselves to smile and look happy and hide their sadness. But it's a human experience, a universal experience. And if we can be more comfortable with our own sadness and learn how to manage our own sadness, then we'll be able to help other people with their sadness. Whereas if we don't know how to deal with it ourselves and we're always trying to shove it under the carpet and avoid it and pretend it's not there, then when we're with somebody else who's sad, we'll probably react in the same way. We'll say, oh, I don't want to deal with this, you know, and run away, or, you know, change the conversation so we don't have to talk about that and look at that. Right? That happens. So that's not helpful. So it's good if you can learn to deal with your own difficult emotions and painful emotions, because then you'll be able to help other people when they're going through those emotions. Does that make sense? And also just to have more compassion, because compassion in Buddhism, this is a really, really important quality. It's an essential quality. Whether it's Theravada or Mahayana or Vajrayana, every kind of Buddhism, you know, compassion is there. It's something we need to develop. Compassion is understanding suffering, understanding that we all have suffering, and being moved to do something about suffering, if possible. We can't always do something about it, but at least we need to be willing to acknowledge that there is suffering and willing to be with suffering rather than afraid of it. I don't want to look at suffering. I don't want to deal with suffering. I don't want to feel suffering. Right? So if you have that kind of attitude, I don't want any suffering, then we won't be able to have compassion. Yeah? So to have compassion, we have to know how to accept and deal with and be comfortable with suffering. And it's actually a beautiful feeling. Compassion is really beautiful. I've done studies in America on compassion, and they found there's so many benefits. Physically, it's good for your health and relieves stress and less loneliness because you're more connected with other people instead of staying all by yourself, disconnected with others. So there's lots of benefits, both physical, mental, emotional, in having compassion. And so it's good to work on having more compassion, feeling more compassion. And this is one of the roots, or one of the doorways to have more compassion, is learning to be comfortable with your own difficulties, your own suffering, your own problems, and understanding I'm not the only one in the world who has problems. Other people have problems too. And I can actually use my suffering, my problems, to be able to help others. Does that make sense? I mean, it's not something that's going to happen immediately right away, but slowly over time. So, in the Tibetan tradition, we actually have this whole section of teachings on transforming problems into the path. So it said that problems are not necessarily bad things. We can use them. Anyway, they're going to be there, whether we like it or not. We can't go through life without having problems. It's impossible. Even if you're a millionaire, a billionaire, you have a huge mansion, you have 10, 20, 30 big mansions and yachts and everything else, so you could be the richest person in the world. You still have problems. Just having a body, having this physical body, it's like a magnet for suffering. It gets sick, gets aches and pains, it gets old, and eventually it's going to die. So just having a body means we have suffering. And then, you know, we're in relationships with other people, and that brings problems too, because everybody has their needs and their wishes and their demands and their emotions and their delusions. So as long as we're connected with other people, interacting with other people, there will be problems. So it's impossible for anybody to go through life without having problems. But problems are useful. We can use problems to get beyond problems. Oh, I wanted to tell you about another wonderful little book, too. It's called No Mud, No Lotus by Thich Nhat Hanh. The subtitle is The Art of Transforming Suffering. It's just a very small, simple book, easy to read, but very beautiful. And it's all about this, how to deal with suffering, how to deal with problems, how to transform problems into something useful. So he also talks about the importance of accepting suffering. He even has a little gatha, a little verse, you know, when you're breathing, doing breathing meditation. He's breathing in, I know that I am suffering. Breathing out, I say hello to my suffering. That's really beautiful, isn't it? Saying hello to suffering. Usually we say, get out of here, go away. I don't want you, I don't like you. So just the idea of saying hello to suffering is very counterintuitive. It's really not what we normally do. But it's similar to Pema Chodron's meditation. Saying hello and being willing to sit with and get to know our suffering. It takes time. It takes time, slowly, slowly. It's like getting to know a new friend, you know? takes time, but slowly, slowly you get to know each other better and you get to be closer, and pretty soon you're really good friends. So learning to be friends with our suffering. But that doesn't mean, you know, we have to just sit with it. If there are things we can do to heal our suffering, cure our suffering, solve our problems, of course we can do those things. But sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes they're still there for a while. So it's good to know ways of being more comfortable with, more friendly with our difficulties, our problems. Okay, any last questions? What? you got the microphone, so you can do whatever you want.
I'm in control. Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, just by meditation on breath alone, does it naturally evolve to, because it's a neutral object, it's not it's not virtuous or non-virtuous. I'm just wondering whether does it naturally evolve to some virtuous mind? Okay, maybe I just give an analogy, because what happened is that if I were to meditate on breath day in, day out for many years, but at the end of life, I'm losing my breath. wouldn't I panic? Because suddenly I'll be losing my breath that I've meditated for 30, 20, 40 years. Yeah, so if it's not doing other purpose, other than I really wonder why I'm doing that.
I don't think, this is my opinion. My opinion is just meditating on the breath alone isn't necessarily virtuous. I think it's only if you're doing it with a virtuous motivation. And also, I mean, in Buddhism, traditionally, you don't only meditate on the breath and that's it. You do a lot more than that. You know, we need to cultivate other qualities, love, kindness, compassion, wisdom, patience, ethics, and so on. So it's not that, I mean, it's kind of become like this in the West with mindfulness. You know, there's some people just take mindfulness out of Buddhism and they only do that, watching the breath, being mindful, and they don't do anything else. It's not bad, it could be very helpful. But that alone, at least from the Buddhist point of view, is not enough to really develop all the positive qualities and free ourselves from all the negative qualities. That's only part of it. We need to do a lot more. So it could be problematic if that's the only thing you do and you don't have any other, you know, related practices or complementary practices, it could be problematic. I don't know, like you say, at the time of death, you could get into a panic that your breath is getting slower and then disappearing altogether. But I think at least in some of the traditions of mindfulness, I mean, the real, in you know, Buddhism, when we're watching the breath, we're trying to understand what are called the three marks of existence: impermanence, suffering or dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, and then selflessness, the absence of a self. So if you're doing the practice properly and coming to those realizations, then that's actually the way to free yourself from the suffering and the causes of suffering, ignorance and so forth. So if somebody was practicing it in that way, then even when they see the breath ceasing at the time of death, they'd know, okay, this is impermanence, the big moment, I'm going to die. But they would also have an understanding of selflessness, no self, there's no permanent self anyway to be afraid of, you know, losing and so on. So I think, yeah, it all depends on how one is doing the practice and whether or not it's connected with other teachings and practices of Buddhism. Yeah, so just meditating on the breath itself could lead to benefit, it could lead to more confusion or suffering, depending on how you're doing it. That's how I understand it. So let's finish for tonight. So Thursday we'll have one more class for this. Of course, this is just the beginning. You know, you can't learn everything there is to know about meditation in just six lessons. But, you know, at least you can get some idea, and then hopefully from there you continue to learn and practice. So let's make a dedication of the positive energy that we've created here tonight, coming together and generating positive motivation, an altruistic motivation for meditating, and doing meditation with that motivation. So we've definitely created merit, positive energy. So now let's mentally share this merit with others, with all living beings, wishing that it will bring peace and happiness, freedom from suffering and its causes, to not only ourselves, but everyone else as well. May it help all of us get closer to enlightenment. Okay, thank you. Good night.